From the North Side Lexus Traffic Desk, an accident over on the West Park Tollway, southbound at Philippine. It is blocking a right lane. That traffic is stacking up from 249. Stop vehicle to watch out for over on the west loop northbound as you get to the Southwest Freeway. It's on that left shoulder. But that traffic has to slow from the Beltway and sitting on the HOV lane of the East Texas Freeway southbound at Bennington. There's a stop vehicle there. And a high water spot to watch out for on the along the Gulf Freeway on the feeder lanes along Airport and Monroe. Thunderstorms this afternoon with a high of 84, 76 degrees right now from the Trailer Wheel and Frame Weather Desk. Emily Escobar, Sports Radio 610.
John Lopez just tweeted that he's leaving his house right now up in Atascocita.
Yeah, how's he doing?
To try to make it to work on time.
7 a.m. Is it bad up there? It's not bad up there, right? It's all down near the bay, I thought.
He said he skipped his workout this morning. This is a tweet. Skipped workout this morning. Going to see how long it takes me to get to Greenway Plaza from Humble. Left the driveway a couple minutes ago. And he takes a picture of his radio and it says, "Yes, that's Sweet Caroline playing on my radio. Don't judge me." Oh, thanks for listening, Lopez. Thanks for listening to Payne and Pendergast.
I will judge you.
Radio 610. That would be a kangaroo court violation by me, by Lopez right there. You can listen to other things, but don't advertise other things on your Twitter account.
Yeah.
Like, oh, hey, I'm listening to this. Not, I don't do that while your show's on, John. Even if I'm listening to Garth Brooks or something
is
like
there,
that.
Is there something wrong with listening to Neil Diamond, by the way?
No, not
why would,
at all.
Why would somebody judge him for that?
One of the most fun concerts I've ever been to was Neil Diamond.
The only thing about Sweet Caroline that's been ruined by obnoxious Bostonians,
right,
who somehow have adopted Sweet Caroline.
They stole
their,
it.
Right,
yeah,
right.
They stole it and took it as their own and ruined, and by proxy, ruined all of Neil Diamond's greatest hits.
Basically painted out Caroline, whoever she is, to be a nasty, filthy, stank,
from Southie,
worthless woman. Yeah, that's she, what that's what's happened. That's what they do to women up there.
She is,
and yeah, in,
some
in
common
Boston.
Hula from Southie.
They don't treat their women well. I'll tell you that.
I'll let you.
It's the damn truth.
It's I'll let you.
Many a fine lady's been torn asunder by the evil Bostonians.
So the Texans apparently have a kangaroo court system in their locker room.
It's probably this is an article in ESPN. Sarah Barshop did a good job with this.
I like stuff like this.
And apparently,
it's not very serious football stuff. We
are
need
you
that
kidding
on a
me?
Tuesday.
This is hard-hitting journalism. Greg Mantz says he doesn't think he's supposed to talk about it. So Sarah Barshop,
like
breaking
it's Fight Club or
it's
something.
It's kind of cool because it's a fun silly story,
yeah.
But she also kind of broke news by doing it.
Very voyeuristic.
Yeah.
We like that.
This is okay, so there's a system, a fine system amongst the players on the Texans, and this is the most extensive one I've ever seen. They actually have commissioners. Dylan Cole is one of the commissioners.
Wow.
Greg Mantz himself is one of the commissioners.
It's like county court.
It almost feels like Dylan Cole, in talking so much about it, might get fined himself because maybe one of the rules. There are a lot of rules with this system, and they vary by position group.
Is this how Dylan Cole got voted a captain, you think?
Like,
the guys wanted to be on his good side, like a mob boss.
So the commissioners carry around these notebooks and keep track of fines.
Oh, that's awesome.
So there's fines for different things. With the linebackers, one of their rules is, and I couldn't tell if it was the inside or outside linebackers that have, at least the inside linebackers.
So it goes
have
by
rule.
Position group,
right.
It sounds like.
Have a rule that if you get interviewed, you have to mention at least two of your teammates in the interview.
Like a shout out?
Yes. Well, or give credit to your teammates in some way. I think that's one of the best rules I've ever seen. Because sometimes, the Denver Broncos, back when they won their Super Bowls in the 90s, they had a rule amongst their offensive linemen that they weren't even supposed to talk to the media except when they had to. They had to do their once a week of media availability, but they didn't want any of their offensive linemen getting too much of a big head or going out on a limb too much.
These are the late 90s Broncos?
Yes, yeah, so included Mark Schlereth.
Oh my God, that'd be like holding in a sneeze for Schlereth.
I know.
Holy crap.
So they used to have big fines and they really frowned upon guys using. I like this because this doesn't keep guys from, you know, developing their own brand in the media and everything, because that's good for after football.
Sure.
But if you're going to do it, be sure that you're talking about your teammates.
That's pretty good.
And I'm trying to think. I interviewed Dylan Cole for about 4 minutes earlier this year.
You did? Do we still have that interview?
I'm going to listen to it later. I can't remember if he mentioned a couple of his teammates or not.
I remember we played it on the air.
I had asked him about the fact that Kobe Bryant had come to speak to
that's
the
right.
team.
That's
that
right.
was another little bit of like a little bit of frivolous news we broke. It, well, it didn't matter, but it,
no,
it,
but they protected
it
like it was Fort Knox. It's unbelievable.
I'm like,
did they sneak him out of the building with a rubber nose and a mustache?
I'm sitting here playing like I'm a reporter or something. I had to get back. I got a second source. Dylan Cole is my second source.
And Kobe Bryant spoke to 90 football players the day before. Hey, this just in, there are plenty of leaks in your system.
Hate to break this news, but you guys had a multiple world champion basketball player and one of the best basketball players
in modern NBA history. Don't know what you're talking
about, Seth. To talk to the team.
What? Don't know what you're talking about. So what else can you get fined for?
You can get fined for snitching, which Sarah didn't go into great depth in this. I'm guessing what they mean is in meetings when the worst thing you can do is sell out one of your buddies by
saying,
give
me an example.
Okay, let's say on the defensive line that somebody makes a wrong call on the defensive line, but then I mess up because of it. You don't want to be the guy that's always saying, well, but DJ said, because realistically, all right, you can handle that amongst yourselves. This varies, though. It depends on what kind of a position coach you have, because it, like, in my opinion, good position coaches have a really open policy of, like, you're not screaming about guys about every little mistake. It really should be everybody's checking each other. Like, I would, in an ideal meeting room, any player can call anybody else out and say, hey, you got to do this on this play. Hey, you got to, and it's not some big, you're going to get screamed at if you mess up.
Right.
But if you got a coach that's kind of tougher, then you got to protect each other as players. You got to, don't go selling out DJ just because you messed up.
I feel like in this new age of William O'Brien, where each week has been basically turned into an episode of The Apprentice, with somebody getting fired, there's going to be more snitching going on. Even this fine system's not going to help. I feel like there's going to be guys trying to like, keep their jobs.
Like,
yes,
after the meeting.
Yeah,
they're going to go up to the coach.
Coach, I just got to ask you about something real quick, and then they get up next to the coach and you whisper like, that was Brandon's fault. That was Brandon's fault.
I remember, I used to do it. I used to self-report. Because it was when I got older, I felt like that was the best way to really just show guys that you got their back.
It's a good credibility.
One time, Travis was getting ripped up and down in a meeting once.
Travis Johnson.
Yeah. And he was a young player. And I was an older guy, and I had called out. He didn't play his technique because I knew it was going to be a pass. So I yelled out, Navy. That was our code word. I yelled, Navy, Navy. Yeah. So Travis didn't do his normal technique because I had told him it was going to be a pass. So Richard Smith, the defense coordinator, is ripping him up and down. And I was like, coach, that's my fault. Then I got yelled at for interrupting the coach.
Did Travis ever thank you for that?
Yeah, he did. Yeah,
he did?
Yeah,
okay.
Travis is cool about
you think
it.
He remembers that if we brought it up?
I don't know. Yeah. I think so. Well, I mean, like, I always felt it was important to show the young guys that you really want to be accountable. When you mess up, plus, if you want to get the heat off you, call yourself out before anybody else does.
I feel like
that's me.
I feel like Travis learned that lesson because Travis basically should be wearing a t-shirt that says, I was drafted before Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Like, he openly says, what were the Texans thinking drafting me when they could have had Aaron Rodgers playing quarterback here?
One of the other ones, and this is the defensive. So the defensive line has different meeting room rules. Yeah. The no snitching one was a linebacker's rule. I assume that might be the same for other stuff.
Yeah.
The defensive line had probably the most interesting passage in here.
You know what's interesting about this is the defensive line position coach Anthony Weaver keeps track of the fines on
an
Excel
commissioner
spreadsheet.
On a spreadsheet, right.
Yeah. And he's a former defensive lineman.
Yeah.
You were teammates with him for a year, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Weaver's a great guy.
And Weaver's not one of those coaches that you'd be afraid of. Like, Weaver's a pretty laid-back dude.
He's like, feels like a player's coach almost.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a player/coach when you talk to him.
He's not a yeller and a screamer.
No.
I'll just read this because this is pretty sophisticated. The defensive line doesn't observe rules for not shouting out a teammate, but the D linemen do have a long list of fine categories that position coach Anthony Weaver keeps track of in an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah.
So I wonder if he's just got it open all the time.
If a player's late, you're going to get to this?
Player's late, $250. The disrespect fine of $50 applies mostly to rookies. So if you sass a veteran or if you sass a...
$50.
$50.
Yeah.
Which is... They mark it down a little bit because the rookies can't be spending a whole lot of money on fine. But don't sass a veteran.
Yeah. Now, to pay off on the tees, the biggest fine of all, which I feel like this is appropriate, in the defensive line room, the biggest fine that's been levied to date is $500 for farting in the meeting room.
Yeah, I wonder if that was, it must have been for excessive. Must have been like a beer fart or something like that.
DJ Reader says it's only happened one time by a player who's no longer on the team.
And it was a $500 fine, so it was going to be a pricier fine.
Yeah. I'm going to guess.
It's going to be Clowney?
Ooh, is he a defensive lineman? Well,
I don't know.
That
was one thing. At times he would be in the defensive line meetings, and from one year to the next, sometimes he was, sometimes he wasn't.
He could afford it.
So I don't know, but he would be, I think he mostly met with the linebackers. Yeah.
I'm going to say Joel Heath.
Oh, okay.
It feels like, Joel, you're trying to make your mark. You're barely a fringe guy on the roster. Like, I'm going to be remembered for something. And then you're $500. What would a, we're talking about this kangaroo court system for the Texans, Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. What would a kangaroo court fine system look like in radio?
The farting one's a big one. I feel farting like that's a big one in any office job, right?
Well, especially when you and I are hermetically sealed in here.
That's the only thing about this job that isn't fun compared to an outdoor job, because outdoor jobs, you get away with doing. I get to wear whatever I want to work and everything, which is cool, like a lot of outdoor jobs, but I'm not allowed to just, I mean, I technically could if I wanted to, but usually you go into one of these other studios. I like to go into the one where Landry is gonna be. So, like, sometimes when Landry walks in, I'll watch his face to be sure.
So you go into the studio, Landry does over, stuff, and you fart in there, and then come back across the hall?
Yeah, I don't fart a whole lot, but when I do, that's where I go.
That's where you
go? I go into Landry's studio.
And people don't know, these doors shut airtight.
Oh, yeah.
So that would keep it in there. Jonesy, you shouted something in our ears while we were talking. What did you say?
Leaving all your garbage everywhere.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of, you come in here in the morning sometimes. And, you know, this is the interesting thing. It was sometimes it's a night host who really should be minding their P's and Q's and trying to do everything right. Like everything right, try to impress people at the organization.
Yeah.
Sometimes a night host will leave barbecue out, leave a half just stuff, trash all over the place, stuff on the floor and everything.
Yeah.
That's a bad look, man. Don't do that. We don't have anybody currently that does that. But.
I would say the ones I jotted down, farting in studio for sure. Should we have a rule where we give shout outs to other shows? Like, we just gave a shout out to Lopez at the beginning of this, talking about wishing him well driving into work.
Oh.
I mean, granted, he's listening to Neil Diamond, not us right now.
So the same way the linebackers, when they do an interview, have to
couple times
mention
a show,
a couple teammates. That would be a good one.
Cross promote.
That should be good. I just talked about Landry too.
Yeah, you did.
I gave him free publicity.
You said you farted in his studio.
But his name's out there.
It is.
Now.
It's out
People
there.
Are thinking about him.
It's out there.
Yeah.
What about getting distracted by the text line?
That's a big
show?
One. That's a big fine.
How much would you have accrued in fines from being distracted by the text line in your 7 years with the station?
A lot more.
Would we need a debt ticker? Like
early years,
Square?
It would have been a lot. Yeah, I get.
Josie's nodding his head. Oh, yeah.
There were times when Mike and I were first together where I don't know if either one of us even knew what was going on in the show. We were both screaming. We were screaming at different people on the
text
line.
On the text page.
There would be, Mike would scream at somebody, then I'd scream at somebody, then Mike would scream at somebody. And we'd go whole shows like that. Now I'm smarter. Like when we started talking about Eli Manning in the Hall of Fame, I just turned the text line off. I'm like, all right, I'm going to get roped in by some psychotic New Yorker here.
Naturally, I go and start reading them out loud to you. Yeah. Like, that was a bad job by me. You know what else would be fineable? Getting out on time. Our boss is in his car right now going, well, here's a $500 fine for not getting out on time. We'll get out now. One Texans rookie had the best statistical week of any rookie at his position in the league. But Seth Payne would like to dispute that. We'll do that next.
I actually feel bad for Brian Flores, the coach of the Dolphins, even though he probably knew what he was getting into.
Even though he probably makes more this season than I've made in this entire decade.
That's a good point. That's what they say about all these college coaches in the NBA, that they're going to take an NBA job even if that's not their dream, because you can't turn that money down.
The worst case, it's a gigantic lotto ticket
right.
for all your years of toiling on the coaching circuit.
And then you go back to college after your contract expires. You've got that lifetime FU money. You've got that resume to be able to tell guys, hey, I know what it's like in the NBA. I'll help get you there.
Amen. Yeah. Amen. Yeah. We were just talking about this during the break, because for the first time in, I think it said in league history, there are two games in the same weekend, NFL games, where the spread is more than 20 points. And just to put it in perspective, a spread of more than a touchdown on an NFL game is
a big
spread.
One. That's like the Texans over the Jaguars at the beginning of last week. It seemed ridiculously big.
It did.
And it did. It came down.
And it was
down.
9 points.
Because it's right. And it came down to, it ended up coming down to seven, right?
Seven. Yeah. Right before kickoff, it came down to seven.
Because nine is huge.
It is. Yeah. Anything more than a score in an NFL game. Well, the Cowboys are at home, and they're favored by 21.5 over the Dolphins. That's not the biggest spread of the weekend.
Well, and at least the Dolphins are tanking.
Yeah.
But the biggest spread is the Patriots.
Who are 23-point favorites at home over the New York Jets.
A team that is not tanking. A team that thought they were going to make something of themselves. Sam Darnold is back in the complex, by the way.
Is he?
He is, right.
Is he coughing on people?
I don't know if he's wearing a surgical mask.
Seems kind of risky.
Do they have him in a Hannibal Lecter suit and they've got him just perched up in the corner of the TV room in his own little bubble?
Right. Boy in a plastic
he's a bubble. Boy. They built a bubble in the quarterback meeting room.
Darnold, that's great. 23-point spread in that game. I'm kind of tempted to take the points, but I just know I'm going to feel stupid by like the middle of the third quarter when the Patriots are up 38-0.
Who does Bill Belichick hate on the Patriots? I don't think he hates Adam Gase. He might hate Greg Williams for whatever nondescript reason. So,
I think everybody hates Greg Williams. That's a good point. Yeah,
He keeps getting jobs. I would think that a lot of people despise Greg Williams, but he keeps getting jobs. Despite never actually having really all that great a defense is other than when he's paying people to injure people.
Is he good at his job?
He's one of those defensive coordinators that if the circumstances are right, he could be really good if he has the right playmakers, because he does a lot of things with his defense that are just frankly technically unsound.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, let's bring six guys through this one hole.
Yeah.
And if it works, it's going to be spectacular. If it doesn't, there's going to be three people wide open downfield. But he does it. He's a little bit of a risk taker. So when it works really well. When it doesn't, it's kind of a
mess. Do you think Greg Williams doubles down on 13 at a blackjack table? Like just totally unorthodox stuff that pisses off the rest of the table?
If I knew what that meant, I would say yes.
Well, you better learn. You got a Bulls and Blackjack coming up on Friday.
I'm just playing poker. I'm not doing Blackjack.
Oh, okay, that's right.
All I do is play
poker. You're
a big poker
player.
I've been doing my YouTube tutorials on poker. Yeah.
How's that going for you?
I'm a little nervous. Yeah, I don't know. The problem. Am I allowed to keep the little card that tells you exactly what beats what?
The poker table. This is not a real casino, so I think you can do whatever you want.
The one that
you're
going to
be bigger than everybody else at the table. What are they going to beat you up?
All those dealers scare me, man. It's an authority figure. I get nervous about the dealer whenever you make a little faux pas and you don't even know what it was.
Yeah.
The one that I never quite. It never seems like a full house should beat a straight. It seems like a straight should beat a full house, and I refuse to acknowledge.
You should
that it
debate
does.
That at the table. Hey, listen, guys, I got a rule change. Like you're playing four square.
Hey, are we playing where a full house
no
beats a straight?
No tapsies. Right? Are we Seth Payne poker where full house beats a straight? So you mentioned Pro Football Focus a little bit earlier.
Yeah, in a derogatory fashion. I'm not pleased with the way it turned out with some of the things they're claiming about this football game.
Well, I don't like it when their scoring system tells us mean, awful things about the Texans. I do like this bit of scoring they had.
Yeah.
With three pressures and a stop and a forced fumble on just 28 snaps, Charles Amenihu paced all rookies with a 90.2 grade in week two. Not bad for a fifth-round pick.
Not bad at all. The problem with that is it makes it look like that's the same as starting and having that grade. He had a really productive day, but he didn't have a whole lot of snaps. And
is that what you want out of a situational guy?
No, I want him that. Like, I'm glad that he did. He did. He looked good. I see some of these headlines that are acting like, oh, Amenihu's going to be an all pro this year or something. That's not the case. He did some really nice things as a rookie in there, and he was an effective player. And I look forward to seeing him more. So it was a very promising kind of his first real splash. He had a few snaps in week one. This week he had a few more. I don't know if he had more than 15 snaps in the game, but he was productive when he was in there. I think that the thing that's important to note is that his best work as a pass rusher was done when he lined up at left defensive end.
Okay.
It wasn't when he was inside. Because I see some people saying, oh, well, there's that interior pass rush that you've been looking for. He did it as a defensive end on the outside more so than when he was lined up inside. It wasn't like he was bad inside. He just didn't get a whole lot accomplished. So he's still a work in progress. He did some really nice things. In the run game, when he was lined up as a defensive tackle in a nickel package, he did a really good job of using his hands, throwing a guy out of the way and making that defensive stop that Pro Football Focus talked about. So I don't begrudge them for pointing out the good things he did. I do, as a defensive lineman, it's a lot easier to come in and make an impact when you're only getting 15 snaps because you're fresh all the time. Your body's not worn down at all. Teams haven't scouted you as much. So I think that if he can keep building on this, it's a really good sign for him. I don't want to put him up on a pedestal right now.
Yeah. I feel like Jacob Martin's done some good things too, rushing the passer.
Yeah, he's
up in the Clowney trade.
He's legitimately fast coming around the edge. And him, Scarlett did some really good things coming off the edge.
Whitney's got three sacks early in the season.
On Whitney's strip sack, Scarlett and JJ both had really good downs on that too. That was a really good pass rush all across the board.
Whitney got there in about the snap of a finger. He was on top of the guy.
It was really, Whitney was going to get a sack on that regardless. It wasn't like somebody got forced to him or anything. I found myself pretty pleased with the pass rush overall. I'm starting to wonder with JJ. You know, for the last few years, we've always thought, well, JJ doesn't do much in training camp, so he gets off to these slow starts sometimes. Maybe he's just a slow starter because the first week, not a whole lot got accomplished. And a lot of that was because Drew Brees got rid of the ball quickly. Some of it was because of a three-man pass rush. And then some of it was that JJ just didn't look as dominant. I felt like he took a step forward this last game, and he was really close. I'm not giving him credit for being really close because that's not the standard he holds himself to. But you look at the second to last play of the game, probably should have had a sack there. And it was as much that he stumbled at the end and couldn't finish as it was Minshew making a great play or anything. That's the kind of stuff that I think he cleans up by week three or week four. I think sometime in the next couple games, you're going to get a really big statistical game out of JJ.
Yeah, I think it's different. It's different to give him credit for that versus saying this is how it makes me feel about what he's going to look like over the next three or four games.
Yeah.
You know, if he was close a few times, you don't sit here and say, well, he had a great week too because he was close a few times. No, and you're not saying that. But if we're going to handicap what it's going to look like here over the next few, if you're asking me based on what I saw from JJ in week two, do I think he's going to break it? Do I think he's going to get his first sack this weekend against the Chargers? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. Similar to last year, he had no sacks the first two games. He had three in week three against the Giants.
Oh, and I was wrong. That's right. I had in my notes here. It was actually on that Whitney Merciless strip sack. It was actually a Menihue and JJ that had a really good game going. The thing that was exciting about that was JJ Watt was lined up at left end. Amenihue was lined up at left defensive tackle. They ran a game, an ET game, where JJ comes inside first and then Amenihue loops around. Amenihue set it up perfectly. This was like a veteran move by him. He occupied the attention of the offensive guard long enough for JJ to come inside clean, and then he looped around. A lot of young players are too eager to get out of there. They're not patient enough. Amenihue showed a whole lot of veteran poise and patience there on that game. That I got as excited about that as I did anything else, and he didn't get a pressure on that play or anything. There's some real potential there for him.
We'll get into headlines where Justin Verlander was Justin Verlander again last night, and also who's the most surprising Texan of 2019 been thus far. We'll hit that next. You're listening. Okay, so ESPN has their power rankings out. You just said,
The deep voice guy got me going.
Really?
No, there's something about this morning. It feels like we've been on the air for 3 hours already.
Is it dragging for you?
No, it's not dragging. I'm having a good time. Okay. I would love for it to continue for three more hours.
Well, it will for 2 hours and 22 more minutes.
It's going to seem like 8 hours.
To you.
But the 8 hours will feel like 7 hours of fun radio.
Is it because you had such funky sleep last night?
I woke up 17 times.
Is that why? Before 10:15.
This rain just trashes my sleep. And it's been like this. I guess I should go get counseling about it. It's ever since Harvey. It really is. Wow. I have a knee jerk.
This is deep.
Whenever we have steady rain like this, I have dreams about my house floating away. I have dreams about my roof just not even, not my roof blowing off, but my roof just falling off my house. Like these kinds of things when the rain comes, because it was such a prolonged, stressful period when my roof was leaking during Harvey. Yeah.
Are you going to be all right?
Yeah, I think I'll be fine. I mean, as long as it stops raining sometime in the next 2 days.
Hey, good luck with
that. Oh, damn it. I might have to take a sleeping pill tonight. Sweet, merciful sleep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nah, it gives, you know what an Ambien does for me, though? It knocks me out for 3 hours and I'm wide awake. And I may try to have relations with my wife like 3 times in that 3 hours and I'm asleep.
What's wrong with that?
With no memory of it, though. That's the problem.
How romantic.
The worst is when I'm successful and I don't remember it. I mean, I slept through the best performance of my life.
I know. Yeah. I could have used the confidence boost. That's funny.
Kids. Adults. I won't even say kids. Adults.
The kids are definitely in the car right
adults,
now.
Be careful with the Ambien. It really... It's not good. You can get into a lot of trouble with the Ambien.
Actually, I say the kids are in the car, but it's everybody's got the day off today, it feels like.
No, so. I think Harris County, I think HISD is in session.
Are they?
I'm not sure. Don't listen to me. Check your internet.
I know Deer Park is not because that's where Amy teaches.
So. Anywhere down near the water is there, it seems like most of those places are canceled.
Yeah, yeah. The closer you get to the water, the worse this stuff is. So the power rankings are out on ESPN. Not that it matters tremendously, but I think sometimes these are good barometers for things.
This is my rule with power rankings.
Okay, good.
Every single time I've ever looked at a power ranking, this is how it goes. Well, these are stupid, of course. I mean, these don't matter for anything. But why the hell are the Texans What? You put the Jaguars in front of the Texans? Yeah. That's how they suck you in.
That's what they're there
you
for.
You know they're meaningless, but you can't help it's the injustice of it, Sean.
Have you looked at the ESPN power rankings?
I haven't. This is going to be fresh to me.
Okay.
Did they put the Jaguars above the Texans?
No, they didn't. Oh. They didn't.
Florio had the Jaguars above the Texans last week, and it was driving me insane.
Well, suck on that, Florio. The
Texans we beat them by one.
Whooped them 13-12.
Take that.
Where would you put the Texans right now?
I'm guessing the old. Don't they have a spot reserved at 16?
That's where you guess for everything.
Yeah, is it 16?
No, they're actually above 16.
Oh, good, good, good.
Yeah, they're 12.
12, all right.
They're 12.
Right.
Yeah, okay, they're 12. And there's more. There's more good news. They have 14 opponents remaining, 14 games left. 10 of those 14 games involve teams that are not just below them in the rankings, but in the lower half of the league.
Yeah.
16th or higher.
I think
16th or lower, I should say.
Would I be wrong in saying that I almost have a feeling where I don't want the Texans to continue to have the easiest schedule in the league like they did last year. The Texans had one of the easiest schedules in the league last year. At the end of it. Now, that's at the end of the season. At the beginning of the season, strength of schedule is always wrong.
It's wonky. Yeah.
At the end of the season, you looked at it and you say, oh, the Texans had one of the easiest schedules in the league. There's part of me that just wants, I want Bill O'Brien to do it versus a tough schedule. I don't want him to have to be defensive about it when he gets asked about it in meetings. I want him to be able to say, yeah, you know what? We had a really tough schedule and we won 10, 11 games with that tough schedule. Screw it.
I just want them to win one of the Chargers, the Chiefs, or the Patriot games.
Uh-huh.
I will take one of those three. Any of those three wins will be the biggest win of the Bill O'Brien era.
That Patriots
victory.
Includes
a game this weekend.
That Patriots victory is looking, that's a dicey proposition no matter who you are in the league
for anybody
right
now. They're 23-point favorites this weekend against the Jets. It's unbelievable.
Against the Jets, though.
Yeah, but still, it's a team that's trying.
Yeah. Oh, they're trying, but they're trying with a third-string quarterback.
Yeah, I get it, but 23 points is, I mean, that's New England 2007 kind of stuff.
You know what? They're trying with a third-string quarterback, but they have other starters on the team that could keep it from going 23. They have Le'Veon Bell. They have a whole bunch of defense. They have a safety that got benched because he was lost.
Right.
Jamal Adams just didn't know what the hell was going on in the game.
Unlike the Dolphins, they're actually still keeping their good players, not shipping them off like it's a garage sale.
But there's parts of the Jets right now where it's same old Jets. Your first round safety is lost in space.
I'm not saying they're a good football team. What I'm saying is trying should be enough to keep a game within 23 points on the aggregate more often than not.
In the ESPN power rankings, they bring up Whitney Mercilus, and this is the big
thing. As the most surprising Texan. Most
pleasant surprise. Yeah. I guess it will be a surprise if he goes on and has 15 sacks or has a career year here or something. You can never predict that, especially after he's had a couple of injuries. I think the way he looks athletically doesn't surprise me. In some ways, though, he looks like a more polished pass rusher. That surprises me. Because usually, you'd think by year 6 or 7 or so, guys have kind of got it figured out. He looks like all those things that people were saying about, hey, he needs to be able to get into a groove, be able to stay in the same spot more, not be moving around as much. That actually looks like it was valid. Because I think he looks like a smoother, more comfortable pass rusher right now.
My most pleasant surprise so far is Carlos Hyde.
Oh, yeah.
Carlos Hyde's fifth in the league in rushing right now, and it's not because of a huge volume of carries. The dude's averaging almost 6 yards a carry.
Do you think that's a pleasant surprise for Duke Johnson?
I think
that's an unpleasant surprise.
Maybe.
I thought he was going to have his chance to be the guy now when Lamar Miller got hurt.
To be the featured back. You know, here's the thing. Duke Johnson's still under contract for 2 more years. Yeah. If I'm Duke Johnson, I want to be the featured guy 2 years from now when all that traffic and wear that I'm getting could actually result in a bigger contract.
Plus, a lot of the problem he had in Cleveland was that he had become third fiddle. They drafted Nick Chubb and then they got Kareem Hunt. And that's when he realized, wow, I'm really just chopped liver around here. He's still first and second fiddle now.
Yeah, he is. I my guess is Duke Johnson's probably pretty happy with his role so far with the team.
Carlos Hyde, but he thought for a brief moment there that he was going to have a chance to be El Hombre, right?
He was, but you got to be honest with yourself. That's, come on, Duke Johnson.
Right, but now you're looking at it from an outsider's perspective. Right. I'm asking you to look at it from Duke Johnson's perspective.
Oh, you're right.
Do you think he was just sitting there thinking, well, look, they signed Carlos Hyde. That's probably it for me.
So what you're,
I'm going to be a backup
so
now.
What you're saying is he was thrilled when Lamar Miller tore his ACL.
Not thrilled, but he also saw his opportunity.
Yeah.
I think that Carlos Hyde, this is the one thing. Fathers, tell your sons, watch Carlos Hyde. If you've made the poor choice of having your son be a running back.
We're already questioning your parenting skill.
It's fine. If he's got a future in the NFL, move him to safety stat. But if it's just, okay, he's a high school football player, maybe a college football player, then by all means, get the glory. Go for the running back. Well, you don't get a lot of glory as a running back in college anymore. But so watch Carlos Hyde run. Watch him do all the Pop Warner things that your coach should do. He keeps his legs churning constantly. It's almost like when he first makes contact at the line of scrimmage, it's like the cadence of his running never stops.
Yeah.
His feet never stop.
That is what they coach you to do in Pop Warner.
It's football 101. Yeah. It's beautiful. Yep. It's really, really nice.
Absolutely.
I would say my biggest surprises are Gilly. Even though he only had three snaps, I liked everything he did in all three snaps that he had. Omenihue, I'm very, very pleased with him so far. And I thought Titus Howard, despite what those propagandists at Pro Football Focus would tell you, actually looked pretty damn good in his rookie debut.
So three rookies are pleasant surprises for you. That's good news. Let's do some headlines, Jonesy.
Against Seattle, Bregman drives one deep to left field. It is 2-0 Astros. Alex Bregman up on the train tracks. Jordan drives one to center field, and this ball is crushed. Air Jordan. Now with direct flights to Hawaii, it's 3-0 Astros.
Jordan Alvarez, story topper. That's who he is.
He's Bregman. You can't just leave Bregman's 300 whatever footer alone. You gotta go 450 something.
Those are back-to-back home runs from Alex Bregman and Jordan Alvarez in the bottom of the sixth inning, which extended a 1-0 lead for Justin Verlander to 3-0. The Astros go on to win 4-1. Yeah, Bregman's bragging about, you know, essentially his home run was him bragging about some of his exploits with the ladies, and then Jordan comes in and is like, well, I had an orgy. That's basically what that was.
Imagine Jordan back in Little League if you're playing on a park with no fence. Just
the ball just keeps going.
You have to keep running
poor
after that thing.
Chasing the ball in center field.
I used to say, there was always like that one kid that went through puberty when he was 11 that would be, we'd be on our parks with no fences and you'd be playing center field and you're just like, oh crap.
And he's still,
I'm gonna have to go find this one in the woods.
He's still this height today.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he was a foot taller than everybody else and now he's just like average height.
I remember so much. It was Casey Lamb at my school and I had to go into the woods all the time to grab these. Yeah.
That's great. Justin Verlander, 6 shutout innings. He's 19-6 now. He'll get at least one more start to go get that 20th win of the year. I think Verlander's probably the chalk right now for the Cy Young Award in the American League.
Cy Young, you could make a case for MVP.
You could. I think he's the most valuable Astro.
His numbers, in 2011, he won the MVP and the Cy Young, and his numbers in a lot of respects are better now than they were then. And that was, and that's with a juiced ball right now, my friend.
That's right. That's right.
He's doing this with a juiced ball at the age of, he's 49 years old.
He's 36 years old.
Same.
So people are going to walk around.
It all feels the same. I'll tell
Someone's going to walk up to their co-worker today and go, did you know Verlander's 49? I heard it.
That's true.
Sean Pendergast said it on the Payne and Pendergast show. That's how this goes.
First and 20 for the Jags from their 20. Minshew calling signal. Here's the snap. Minshew looking. Here comes Merciless, and Whitney brings him down. The ball is out. Another scrum. The Texans say they have it, and they do!
They do. That was Mark Vandermeer on the call. Whitney Merciless with the strip sack fumble. J.J. Watt recovers that fumble. Why are we playing that highlight? Because Whitney Merciless was named the AFC Defensive Player of the Week this week.
Hey, Whitney!
Second Career Player of the Week award, the first for him since week one of 2016. That would have been against the Chicago Bears.
We need to celebrate these little things more because we have them quite a bit in with the Astros and the Rockets, obviously. And the Texans, as a top-heavy team, they've got plenty of guys that end up getting these Player of the Week and Player of the Month awards.
Yeah.
It's just that they gotta bulk out the middle of the roster a little bit. Which maybe they have. Maybe William O'Brien has. Some of these rookies have impressed me as I watch last week's game more and more, I'm more and more impressed with the rookies.
Whitney stuffed the stat sheet on Sunday. Two sacks, two forced fumbles, two quarterback hits, two tackles. Deuces are wild. It was week two. Whitney Mercilus is two names.
Two forced fumbles.
He has two arms, right. two hands,
boy, that's
two feet.
The forced fumble.
He's a regular Noah's Ark here.
The forced fumble is maybe the most valuable stat in football. Dom Capers used to tell us all the time, if you can find a way, if you're a defensive player that finds a way to turn the ball over, to create turnovers, we will find a spot for you on this football team.
Well, especially because turnover margin is always seems to be tied to victory, and fumbles are very random. If you can find somebody that takes the randomness out of fumbles.
Well, caused fumbles aren't necessarily random. Recovered fumbles
are.
That's
a good point.
I think there's consistency. Maybe I'm wrong on that. I think that
sounds right.
Some players are pretty damn good at forcing turnovers.
That sounds right. Third item here, Jalen Ramsey. He met with the media yesterday. I'm assuming that Jalen Ramsey just has a weekly press conference, because I don't know that it was a great idea to put him in front of the media when word of him wanting to be traded leaked on Monday.
And yet, the league mandates that he has to be available at least once. So as the team, you're going to say, well, you've got to talk to the media.
Yeah.
Go trash us.
Here are highlights from Jalen Ramsey's press conference yesterday.
Why do you want out? What is it philosophically that's not meshing anymore?
Man, I'm super excited to play this Thursday, dog. I didn't leak that information. Me and my agent, we are not the ones who leaked that information. And I was very strict about that, because I did not want it to get out, and I didn't want it to be a distraction. I didn't want everybody asking my teammates all type of questions throughout the week. So let me be real clear about that. I was not the one, me and my team, we was not the one to leak that information, because I thought about my teammates. I thought about stuff like that. So y'all need to ask the other side or whoever.
Just to be clear, there was not a band in the media workroom playing music underneath that. It was a highlight reel of the cuts from it, so whoever I stole that from had played music underneath
it's a
it.
A weird jam
for
to put
dramatic
to that.
Reasons.
It kind of took away from the seriousness of it.
Yeah.
As I had a chance to talk to a bunch of different people from the Jaguars before the game last week, a lot of people are still there that I remember from my playing days there. There's a whole lot of drama right now in Jacksonville.
This goes back to last year.
There's stuff. I had a lot of just guys shaking their heads and saying, you just wouldn't believe. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know where to start. And that's how it is. There's a lot of drama. There's something about the organization that can't seem to get out of their own way in certain respects. It's always, I wish I could go do a deep dive and kind of do surgery on some of these teams and figure out who are the one or two people that really just throw everything awry. What's going on? You know, like in anything dysfunctional, a lot of times, a dysfunctional family, sometimes it's one person in that family that throws everything out of whack.
Do you think it's Jalen Ramsey with the Jags?
No. I think it is. This is from before Jalen Ramsey was ever there.
Okay.
I don't know.
You?
No. It continued. Yeah. I was so, I damaged that organization so thoroughly. That it has now been 17 years and they haven't recovered quite yet.
The only reason I brought you up is so we could establish boundaries. It happened sometime after you and sometime before Jalen Ramsey. Somewhere in that 16-year period.
And yet they went to the AFC Championship game just 2 years ago.
2017, they absolutely. With Blake Bortles as their quarterback, of all people.
Well, that's what I think we have to go back to is wonder how on earth was Blake Bortles extended and Pat Mahomes not drafted?
Yes.
Those are the questions you want to ask. Why did you choose Blake Bortles instead of Pat Mahomes?
Yeah, well, they chose Leonard Fournette in that draft
instead
of Mahomes and Watson. And they had a chance to draft Lamar Jackson the next year
mm-hmm.
in 2018. They didn't do it.